reason that we did here was mainly in terms of the requirement. This is what we refer to as a user requirement for different government institutions, in terms of what is it that they want so that they can make it with the design of the network. And that's really what we did on this activity. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair and Member. I will be reporting on the activities of the PNC in 2006 of the Department. During this period, PNC facilitated a process to ensure the incorporation of the ICAS line into the provincial government development strategies, user strategies in the provinces. In this activity, technical support was provided to the Bobo and Northern Cape provinces within the context of the INSPIRE. Which is within the framework agreement signed between Finland and South Africa. A total of 1,200 people were identified to this municipality, leading to the formation of additional 50 youth e-cooperatives. 500 of these young people were selected to undergo ICT training, and this training is provided by the Challenge of Technology. The eco-operatives from Northwest and Mpumalanga were deployed in select municipalities where they developed websites. In another activity, 377 young people were recruited and trained on ICT skills and life skills, and thereafter they were deployed to undertake community development work as volunteers in hospitals, clinics, health centers, and energy colleges. In this case, I want to highlight that these young people were paid a stipend of 1,000 rand. Other activity that leads to the National Digital Project Program, which is a portal which conveys cultural heritage content, we have trained 30 young people on technical development of the portal and facilitated the portal to populate stories, mainly which were collected in Northwest. A total of 465 young people were also recruited and were to be trained in the second phase of the project. So the topographical data was collected to determine the location of the university school, and this led to the program that DC Rotary spoke about in relation to the Wallace-Southern network of the university schools. In this case, the legal requirements were also identified, which is critical to determine the network which was referred to in the infrastructure plan. The eSkills Institute was also established, a framework developed which proposed focus areas for research that needed to be undertaken, and this program also has a eSkills working group which facilitates this work. I'll hand over to Dr. Bessel to the program last time. Thank you.
Good morning, honourable members. This is a brief report of where we are with the Marathi Eskills Institute. The foundation elements are in place at this point in time for the institute to be established as a legal entity. The ESI will offer higher education qualifications in eSkills, and the idea is that the first certificated courses will be offered as from June 2010. The ESI is responding to the thinking framework for the development of South Africa, as developed by the South African Eastern Council, but also responding directly to the medium-term strategic framework and its focus on skills development, the World Summit Information Society, as well as the demands in terms of the Millennium Development Goals. So some of these foundation elements include the concept that we have developed, which is a fairly unique concept, nationally and internationally. And the focus is on improving the quality of life of people in Africa using ICTs. And the concept we use there is a social appropriation of technology. But we're also focusing on the employment readiness of our students, and that is why we focus on three strategic areas in terms of issues development, issues for government, issues for business, and issues for development. area, a key focus for us is to collaborate. It's about collaboration with our other institutions. It's also for us very important if we utilize existing capacity in the country, because we're facing a serious crisis in terms of ICT skills, and we need to ensure that we utilize all existing capacity. And this is happening within the context of the information society and knowledge economy. We also position the ESI nationally and internationally within the context of academia, corporate world, government, civil society, and we've signed a number of non-financial MOUs with local universities, and we engage universities in other countries to come on board as well. We have launched at the beginning of this year the Knowledge Production Hub, or Research Hub, that we call the National Skills, National Skills Development Initiative, and that will provide the country with cutting-edge research within the ICT e-skills environment. We are also in the process to develop a National E-Skills Development Plan. That is on track. We are planning an international e-skills summit for July, August next year, and we are busy with what we call a path to the summit, where we try to engage the different constituencies, academia, civil society, the corporate world, to identify the issues that will be discussed at the summit, and out of that we will plan a national e-skills plan, development plan. We also, at the moment, and in the beginning last year, we're working on the fundamentals for e-skills qualifications, and looking at forward-looking initiatives, like for example at the moment, convergence engineering qualification at different levels. We're working with FET colleges on a number of projects in terms of developing new information science knowledge economy curricula. And I think lastly, we have to ready ourselves for what is called the Web 2.0 generation. And that is a generation being born into a new kind of world where new technologies are being developed and are emerging. Talk about YouTube, Mixit, Facebook, and all of these new technologies. And the institute is located within that kind of context in order to ensure that our young people will be able to have the skills going forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson and honorable members. I will be taking you through the financial performance of the department for the period under review. I will do a comparison from the 2007-8 financial year with the 2008 financial year. The department received an annual appropriation of 1.9 billion in the 2007-8 financial year, which increased to 2.3 billion in the 2003 financial year. Departmental revenue decreased from 4.4 billion to 3.5 billion. And under current expenditure, the under compensation of employees, the expenditure increased from 97.7 million to 107 million. Goods and services increased from 213 million to 269 million. But, under financial transaction in assets and liabilities, it increased from 65,000 to 121,000. In total, the expenditure for the department increased from 310 million to 377 million. continuing to under transfers and subsidies. The transfers from 2007-8 financial year increased from 1.5 billion to 1.9 billion, which was mainly due to an unprecedented of 500 million for Centex. Under tangible capital assets, the expenditure decreased from 8 million to 6.6 million. Software and other intangible assets, it increased from 377,000 to 6.1 million. And total expenditure for capital was therefore increased from 8.4 million to 12.7 million. In total, the total expenditure, including transfers, increased from 1.9 billion to 2.3 billion. Budget funds, which were surrendered to the National Treasury, the funds which the department could not use in the 2007-8 financial year, it decreased from 12.7 million to 2.8 million. Maybe if I can just emphasize on the 2.8 in the 2008-9 financial year, the 2.8 million, which was surrendered to National Treasury, was earmarked funds which could not be used for other purposes. This amount was made up of 1.1 million, which was allocated for to divorce funds, which is used to for payment of accommodation. And that accommodation and water and light, as we had in efficiency savings under this item. And then the other part of it, which was 1.7 million, was the expenditure on our YM2, which was also earmarked, and the savings was as a result of the reduction in maintenance costs. In total, the departmental revenue decreased from 4 billion to 3.5 billion. The total amount transferred to National Treasury at the end of the financial year 2008-9 financial year is 3.5 billion. Coming to the appropriation statement, this statement details allocations to the various programs of the department and reflect the expenditure as at the end of the financial year. I'll concentrate mainly on the period under review, which is the 2008 financial year. The first program is administration, had a final appropriation of 148 million, and the expenditure realized was 147, leading to a variance or an understanding of 1.1 million, which is what I was alluding to say this was earmarked funds, which could not be used for other purposes than what it was intended for. The second program is ICT International Trade, which was allocated 53.4 million, and the entire amount was spent. The third program, ICT Policy Development, allocated 71.4 million, and the whole amount was also utilized. The finance and ICT enterprise development, which mainly, or this is where the transfers to our entities are housed. The allocation was 1.9 billion, and the entire allocation was transferred to the relevant entities. And the breakdown of this transfers will be detailed in the later in the presentation. Program 5, which is ICT infrastructure development, was allocated 96.6 million and 94.8 million, which translates to 98%, was utilized, and a variance of 1.7 million water lines. This is what I also added to area, to say this is the amount I'm needed to the 112 and water lines due to the reduction in maintenance costs. The last program is our Presidential National Commission, which was allocated 42.9 million, and the entire allocation was spent. And the total expenditure was therefore 2.3 billion, and the total variance or the amount that was unspent was 2.8 million. The following slide gives the economic classification of the appropriation to the department, and it is divided into three phases. The first one being on three categories. The first one being the current payment. The appropriation here was 380 million, and the actual expenditure was 377 million. And the transfers, the 1.9 billion was allocated, and the whole amount was also transferred. And the payment of capital assets, 12.7 million allocated and utilized. The next slide provides the details of transfer payments to the entities, and all the transfers were, as I alluded before, were transferred to our relevant entities. FASA was allocated 21.1 million. The Universal Service and Access Fund 32.7 million. ICASA was allocated 234.4 million, NEMISA 29.6 million, SAPO subsidy 363 million, Centec digital transmitters or the DCT 125 million, Centec wireless broadband was 500 million. The SABC Public Broadcaster, 206 million, and SABC Channel Africa, 2.9 million. The details of the transfers, which continues on the next slide. The SABC program production, as I said, appropriation was 13.9 million. The SABC Community Radio, community radio station was allocated 2.2 million, which was also utilized. The ZA domain name authority 1.5 million, the Rapa Institute 6 million, the transfer to the access CETA 113,000, Telcom, the allocation to Telcom for the 2010 guarantee 600 million. And the NEPAD Africa Commission will transfer 2.5 million.
I think the best time to talk to an honorable member to at the end of the presentation by the department with regard to our performance in the last financial year. We will obviously welcome questions.
Thank you very much. Any questions, comments? Veranda? My question is about the staff entity that reports to the Department of Communication. If the department can tell us that they are happy with the way entity are performing this duty, that they are allocating so much money to them. If they are not taking, then what they are doing in terms of assessing whatever shortcomings that are there, or challenges that are there, are they meeting with this entity? Are they getting support from this public entity? The relationship with this entity. Because not a team of that, because everybody is a typical and also I would like also to get some analysis whether the customer service is doing this job in terms of the department where we are taking up the department that is with the customer. Performance so far. I think also I need one guy to share. I would tell you which is that number 15. Where you talk about what the fund is then you're correcting me if I'm wrong. You said 1.7 million was surrendered, which was allocated for maintenance. That's what you said. That was 1.7 million. Okay, was allocated for maintenance. Chair, I would appreciate normally I'll come back because I need that direct step because I want to stick to my questions there.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. The amount that was surrendered is an allocation to the 112 call center. The amount, the allocation to 112 is for the maintenance of the call center. The reason why we say the amount could not be used is because we had a reduction in terms of cost, maintenance cost. For instance, if in the maintenance of the call center, then you do not spend more than you anticipated, and therefore the money was not spent and was returned to treasury.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for your presentation to the Department of Communication. I can see that you really met with the target in employing people with disabilities, but I can't see which level they are appointed, managerial level, in which level are they appointed. And then also in your report, you spoke on page 17, the SMS and the NMS. Yes, I know it's not linked to phone, but maybe if you can just give a clarification on those abbreviations. And then on the PowerPoint presentation, on slide number 10, you said many people, like 500 young people, are selected for the ICT and then skills development, and then 77 young people were recruited. And how many people of those people that you recruited can you comfortably say that they were people with disabilities, and what were the percentage of those youth that was recruited was people with disabilities? And then the setup boxes for digital migration. You said that you will be looking for local manufacturers here in South Africa. Were you successful in finding manufacturers here in South Africa? And also, that will also assist us in job creation near the Africa. If you can just answer my question there. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I think you did a question for the presentation. Well, that's number one. We have no question. I see here you are mentioning from the top of the patient A and getting the strategic training. I also like to check when we got to Editor General of the MAC in this annual report that in most of the departments, senior manager doesn't declare their interest. I just want to check in the communication department. Do you also have this kind of a case? How far is it going? The other one is still like number five. On this United Schools and other projects that we have every department, what criteria do you use? Or even if the criteria is determined or done by other departments like education, what role do you play there? What is your target? Because I've seen some of the youth, in particular, that in the school, youth in the school, it moves to high school. Why are we not also targeting the secondary school? Why is our focus mainly on high school? And the other thing is in regards to the maintenance of the resources and the monitoring and the skills, also the usage of the resources, especially in the low-fee school. How will they get found to maintain the computer and all those other things? And lastly, is in regards to generally, there's a lack or no skills whatsoever in terms of the ICT, especially from our black dominant areas. From the IT sector, what role will the department play to encourage young people to venture in this important
communication sector? Thank you, Chief. Thank you. We will answer the question potentially of the first one, right into the last one, and I will call upon the members of our team to answer that. The very first question related to the central entities and other entities that report to the department, report under the Department of Communications, and what control mechanism we have in place. The specific entity that obviously was referred to is SAPC, but we do understand that the question extends to other entities. The department has recently, in our direction, the department has recently embarked on a project whereby we are reviewing all the shareholder contracts that we have and the different performance agreements that we have with the entity, in order to actually strengthen the oversight role that the department is actually playing with respect to these entities. And because of the attention that has been received, received by both the SAPC and CENTEC, we have identified both SAPC and CENTEC as entities where we will specifically be engaging with them to try and finalize more improved and more stringent elements of their shareholder contracts. But we are in the negotiation phase. You will also note that even with other entities such as NELISA and USAFA, we are also in discussions with those entities to specifically strengthen the oversight role and the monitoring that the department will be undertaking. I think maybe it's important to also emphasize that from an SABC perspective, we are also envisaging a more of an active role with regard to the governance structures, especially with regard to the manner in which finances are handled. As an interim measure, we are proposing that that the department has some implementation and in some of the board subcommittees, such as the audit committee, the risk and management the risk and audit committee, just so that we can have some early warning mechanisms in the event that there be potential for some problems, recurrence of problems that we're currently having within the SAPC. Now, specifically with regard to the question on ICASA, in terms of the ICASA Act, there is a requirement that the performance agreements be concluded with the ICASA counselor, and that the Minister of Communication presents to the National Assembly proposed terms and conditions. We are working on those proposed terms and conditions.
In fact, we would have wanted to have presented those proposals from the Commission for the Ikhanda Councillor at the end of last month, but due to certain delays with regard to finalising the elements and the provisions of his performance agreement, we weren't able to do so. But we are sort of tracking the process, and we are hoping that in the very near future, the Minister will then be able to present the proposed terms and conditions for the performance agreement with the Ikhanda Councillors to the National Assembly. So that is something that is being communicated from the Department, and we'll be presenting it to the Minister to then present to National Assembly as soon as possible. From what I understand, the person on slide number 16 fell away at the Tropical Project for Lake Magic Survivors. There was a question with regard to disabilities, persons with disabilities, and the level within which they've been employed within the Department. I'll ask Carter to deal with that one. Even the question with regard to what SLS and LLS stand for. If you could please deal with the two questions that relate from HR and employment, the two questions on that. And then I'll ask the Chairman of Chair to then deal with the slide number 10 with regard to use of starting from disability.
Thank you, Chair Sister. With regard to the persons with disability, I think it's a good point that was made, so I think it's our table. And I think the next figure will indicate, because we did see the problem, we do not use the level. But I can say that one of the three people is a few thousand, in fact, one of the senior managers, and the others are the lower managers. And this leads me to answer the issue of our beloved acronyms of FNS and NNS. This comes from the public service sector. FNS stands for Senior Management Service Members, and that would be all staff from director upwards, director, chief director, deputy director general, and the director general. NMS stands for Middle Management Service Members, and middle managers are people with deputy director level and assistant director.
Thank you very much. On the question relating to the police urban and technical training, I wish to just indicate that we don't have the details of exactly the young people, whether they are disabled or not, and we wish to check this details in the list of young people we have.
Deal with the issue on the question on set-top box manufacturer and set-top box manufacturer and involvement of the local manufacturers. In the recent newspapers, there was an address that just took out indicating that the department is having a summit on the manufacturing of set-top box program or process. The reason we are holding such a summit towards the end of this week, I believe it's the end of the week, is because we want broader public participation with regard to the proposal on the ownership structure that must be put in place for the manufacture of set-top boxes. We are alive to the fact that there must be local participation, but we believe that the outcome of the summit will then inform the department with regard to the extent and the manner of local participation and the level within the developmental food chain, which there should be local manufacturers and extent of that. So once we have had the summit, then obviously we'll prepare an outcome document which will then address the issue of local participation by local manufacturers. And with your permission, Chair, I'd like to indicate that even though our letter is delayed, we have invited members of the committee to actually attend the specific summit on Thursday and Friday. So we did delay with sending out those letters, but we will be mentioned in the book. I will hand over to the council to deal with the issue of the declaration of interest. The denial of school, I'll ask the visitor to assist, and then the failure of the young people, I'll ask for the visitor.
Thank you, Chair. With regard to the declaration of interest, based on the formal process that is driven on a yearly basis by the Public Service Commission, where the Public Service Commission is required by the minister to ensure that all SMS members complete their declaration of interest forms. And those forms are required by the Public Service Commission and must have to be submitted formally. And the minister must sign off that all the SMS members are signed. So we have complied. Sometimes we were back in the forms 6 years, but this year we were quite on time. With regard to the issues that came out in the audit tribunal report looking at intervention of interest. Specifically, we would like to government departments doing business with companies where the status of the company is that official for what figure. We as a department decided we need to sharpen that as well, and we are seriously considering and looking at putting policies in place that actually all staff members be required on an annual basis to complete declaration of interest forms. When issues came to light in the department, and if I'm mistaken, my colleague, my teacher, will assist me, but I know the supply chain management process, all the people working with in that area are required to also sign on an annual basis declaration of interest. In the departmental bargaining, departmental education committee, at the same meeting, all members, irrespective of level, must see the interest. So that's what we have in place, and that's what we are planning to put in place to ensure that the declaration of interest is possible.
Thank you. Maybe in our community schools, we just provide a context of how we ended up focusing on the negative project as a department. Initially, what we actually wanted to do was to connect all the schools, and this is what we referred to as Central Commissioner Wallace Company. But when we started the business change in terms of the amount that was required, generally communicated that the social support system to fund the network. And following those discussions with the late minister and the minister of the then minister of finance, an allocation of 500 million was allocated to the department that's the center for the wireless processing. Because the money was not enough, we then felt that how can we utilize the 500 million to have the maximum benefit. That's how we got to the issue of the community school. It was based on the 500 million. And at the time, there were only 500 community schools. How we get to the community schools is a rating from the Department of Education in terms of schools that performed well in math and science. Yes, it is true that some of the community schools are from areas that are well off, but also there are schools that are also from areas that are not well off. Now, the criteria that we used to select 233 out of 500 was based on the maximum benefit in terms of schools that are coming from low poverty area, but also it was based on the design rationale to say when you install a base station at an elementary school, what is the maximum coverage in terms of covering not only the elementary school but the surrounding area. So we also looked at how many schools or kids are in the surrounding area of age in our school. So we use those criteria in planning, in selecting the 233.
Jay, I think the security provided to a large extent the answer to the question around primary schools and high schools within the related context. I think the issue around the primary schools is important. There is part of the role of the future institute is to ensure that there is articulation between the different levels of education as far as ICTs are concerned. We find that there's no synergy between the different levels, primary, secondary, and university and deputy colleges. And I think it's important that we include primary schools in the future to ensure that we know what's happening in the different areas.
I don't think that the answer on something of interest is a very exclusive. Because all of us know that people must appear in the issue. That's not the issue anymore. The issue in fact is understanding is that in some instances in some departments, people that are in certain positions also have interests outside of the department. For example, through tendering processes, or where people are working with the department, get money from the department, and they are shareholders. Now, I think what's important for us to know is that in this AD's report and in the, I hopefully,
many people in this department that fall in that category? And if so, I would make a strong suggestion that a full report on each individual is given to this committee, to the chair, to see how we deal with it. Because in my view, if there are people like that, I think they should come and account here in this committee, not to the whole public, how they're working in a department and they are benefiting from contracts from that department. If, of course, there aren't any such people, then, of course, the latter part that I'm raising falls away. But I really think, Chair, is this thing happened in the newspapers, everyone just kept quiet about it. I found it absolutely stunning that there are civil servants that in this way can have a job and still have benefits outside of government. I mean, it's just wrong. So if this department is in that category, they have to go and check each one of those, if they're not, and they must come back, I suggest, Chair, to the committee and fully report on each of those individuals, and we see how we take it further in the committee. Thank you, Chair.
Can I also just, on the same issue, there's a question of output. It's a new issue that you mentioned. Certainly, if you look at the Public Service Commission report on global level, there's a substantial percentage of people whose wives or husbands, their countries, their females, who are entering into business conflict with their children and society. Now, ordinarily, I don't think it's a requirement for the South to be changed. But I think it's an issue that they should consider, because as an employee of the department, I might not be engaged in expertise, but I'm fully conscious of my wife, whether it is an easy family and involved. I have learned this information at my disposal, which I just go home and share at night. And I prepare a business proposal with my family, but I'm not the applicant. I think we'd like to get some clarity on these issues. And I think there is a proposal at the moment from Mr. Langer that we look at the safety of the committee. It is on this matter or other matters? Okay, fine. So, for long,
No, sir. I'm just basically covered. I was congressed on a lot of member advocating and just indicated. Because for me, chair was the matter of also understanding to what extent in the department is that the senior officials are feeling this is the department that we think. And it is other thing conversation is raising the issue of the other department. But I'm saying within the department, being a senior manager and the attendance in the department and your company is taking example of that or you got interest in that. I'm saying I think we must take a general approach on the next. It cannot be the boss which are coming so strong on the matter and the department they take it nice. It was so strong on the board members, but when come to the department they seem to be just an easy thing, certainly fine. So I would like to also understand that internally, what is certain. Because that is also what they do in terms of decision making, where internal people also can begin from their own processes and so on. I will tell you, Chair, why I'm raising that. The second issue, Chair, is that you see the issue of housing. I think the matter will need to be followed because other people are married in the community of property, but they don't disclose. They are spouse is something and separate, but when you look at them, they are married in the community of property. They should be disclosed, even if they are spouse, because it's by the manner in terms of their marriage, they are telling those things. But I'm just raising that was one issue which seems to be there is the issue of conflict of interest. But check, the reason why I'm asking about in the department, you got a report somewhere indicating that there's a 5.1 million which was spent without following proper procedure in terms of this process of tendering and so on. Now, if you understand the internal conflict, maybe you can understand how those things manifest themselves at the end of the day in terms of having such amount without any proper procedure and so on. But I would like also maybe the department to indicate because you see, I'm sure it's a very delicate situation, the city is new, you know, and so on. It might not be there in terms of what happened, but also to explain this 5.1 million, what is the difference? Because the auditor general is saying it's 5 whatever, in terms of note 34, which is not in the report, by the way. Note 34, I tried to look at the report, there is no note 34. But the report is saying note 34, there's a 5.1 million, which the tender process is in question and so on. What happened then exactly? What is the department doing in terms of taking action? Because you see, for me, the department is also supposed to act like the board are doing when issues of irregularities are being discovered and so on. Just to check what are the actions which the department is taking in terms of dealing that particular matter. And I must say, if they need to roll the matter, if people need to be suspended in terms of that, they must be suspended. If it's a suspensive matter, in terms of what happened in the size for 1 million, because we can't hide ourselves somewhere else and other people are listening out there. Yeah, others are tightening, others are different and so on. So I would like to get some more clarity around the particular matter. But the other issue which is not blending into the report by offer, is the development which I'll be just looking closely at. The independent procedure who are now approaching other departments about their plans of payment and so on. I don't think it's I'm sure those people report out for purpose and other things related to that, they ask those people that. But I'm also interested to know what is the take of the department. Because you see, when you approach the other minister for art and culture and so on, they are not just the right person for SAPC, but they didn't approach on this matter. I want you to know what the take of the department around the particular matter so that we are not seen as people who are not caring for those people who are playing a crucial role in terms of the content of the SAPC and so on. I've been following that one, but I think to understand exactly what is the issue around it. The last issue said only the Naledi school. Now, sir, I was trying to understand exactly what is the problem there. I'm not because, and when you engage them, there is the issue of half a million at one point, which is not sufficient, as they are saying, to send the school to do that. But there's an anomaly which I'm not sure that it's normal. Because people assume that that project has also had a specification of the technology. It has not seen that it has been left to plain text to connect with any other technology. There's a specific technology to be precise to say you connected in a lady school on this technology. And that technology seems to be a problem when we're engaging them on the business. They are indicating that the technology which is prescribed seems to be the problem or an impediment to make sure that you connect. If you look for a cheaper technology, you can go out the school with the same amount, but most of the technology prescribed currently, it may be difficult for them to roll out the door. I want to know to what extent that matter is addressed or invented, whether the issue of the technology, I just forgot the name of the technology which has been prescribed for them to roll out of the new school. But what extent is that the thickness? Because when the school connected, but the technology seems to be expensive, but the students to be alternative for you as to see their particular and so on. How far the department around the particular matter? In the line note, on the slide number 11, I can see that there's a National Democratic Revolution there. The NGR, but there is a need to convert North. The NGR will be recorded in National Digital Repository. I thought it was the National Democratic Revolution. I thought it's in line for the fact that it's upstanding the Georgia Poster of Barrow in this house, addressing as in Parliament. I thought it was a progressive thing. Now I realize that you know something else. I was disappointed in that form.
Thank you, Chairperson, and this and your team have well presented the report. I just want to ask a couple of things. The first was how big is the Department of Communications? you look at a national level, and they in the regions, direct regerings, there must be a DLC department. And then I just want to ask how this policy of the DOC filters to the ground. It's wonderful to say a lot of beautiful things in Parliament, and you just give orders to all the departments, just send you through what you've done. All right. But can we see something practical on the ground? For instance, sir, you refer to all the education and the ICT projects, and it sounds really good, but are there really people benefiting from this whole thing? And another thing is, did you keep the expertise in the department? Because we've seen it in various other entities inside the Department of Communications, for instance, ICASA members joining some of the cell phone networks because they are trained inside ICASA and then they're gone. So are you actually in a sort of training mood all the time? But I also want to know, I see on, if you look at the compensation of employees, there's an increase. Is it more personnel? Is it increase in salary? And then, as we've seen what happened at the SMC, there's a top, you know, the top management. It's very top heavy. If you look at the top management of the DOC, the middle management, and then, as I can call it, there were the workers in the department. Okay, and the last thing, if you look at the last page, the details of transfer payments. The second last one, Telkom received 600 million. Should I ask why? Don't the SBC need that 600 million more? What's the rationale after that? The 600 million, they are making a lot of money, Telkom. We are paying for their services. Why would they receive such a lot of money from the Department of Communication? Thank you, Chairperson.
On the issue of the question about the comments and questions that were made with regard to the conflict of interest situation with regard to the needs of the department, I'd just like to add to what the CEO has indicated. Yes, we have received specific complaints with regard to certain senior managers having conflict of interest situation and obviously using their positions in the department to obtain advantage themselves, especially in relation to using their spouses to procure business from the department. The matter has been investigated and steps were taken against a specific individual. The individual has since left the department, but we do intend on obviously pursuing whatever recourse is necessary should it be possible for us to pursue it in open court. But with regard to the current staff members that we have, the current senior management staff members that we have, which it is obligatory for them to declare their interests, but over and above that, we do undertake a security clearance to just check that the declarations that they provided us with are actually correct and in line with what is registered with the registrar of companies. But we are also intending on intensifying our policies in order to make sure that there is this obligation to continuously declare should one be involved in and get involved in other businesses. Now, the issue with regard to whether employees are actually spending the required amount of time in the office or are they spending their time pursuing other business interests, that is an issue that that the department is specifically pursuing. Because now we have a central register in terms of which member of the staff are not permitted to just go off and set up meetings that the management is not aware of. There is a requirement that meetings have to be not only that if members of staff want to set up meetings that set up their topics, there must be notifications in the department and there must be approval by the immediate manager. So that at any given time, if a person is out of the office, we are very clear to where they're whereabouts and that it is linked to the work of the department. So that is a control mechanism that we're putting in place in regards to that. And there will be specific monitoring of that, and the policies will be amended in the specific provisions. So that we are very clear that all the time that is utilized by the employees is for the benefit of the department and they clear accountability. And all meetings that are attended outside the office, we do expect that support will be provided to the department with respect to subject to the
So, on this issue of declaration, are these public documents and are they open for public discussion or are they closed and confidential?
The declarations are in terms of our HR policies, which will obviously be confidential because all the questions of an individual HR file are confidential documents, but should it be required by the committee that we make such documentation available, we could investigate whether or not the information is in place.
I just want to share with you. I understand you're saying from the auditor's report and from your investigation, there was only one person who accepted the contribution. That person has left, but you're still investigating the family. But other than that, there aren't any at this stage that we have to worry about. And if that is so, then also the second thing is, I would still ask the chair that we ask that you be given a report on that. You can then decide once you've got the report. We don't need the intimate details and stuff, but what we definitely need is what was the relationship, who, what work did they get, what was the contract. As that contract still exists, even if the person left the department, etc., etc., and we at least get that detail that you can then decide how you want to deal with the matter further. But I want those two things. Is there only one in the whole department? Then the other thing I really think we need to look at is a mechanism how we will regularly get reports on this, so that we can make sure the department is actually checking all the time and reporting to us to say, everything is clean, we've got everything. Also, when I was in my Department of Justice, you know, I remember at the time there were hundreds of people in relatively senior positions. And for a year or two, don't send those forms in. So you can't actually pick up a problem because you're not getting the report in. Then you put pressure on them, the department never disciplines them, never puts them on this, just keep asking them to get it. I think what we need is a full report of this matter. Has every official in this department handed it in? Are they doing it timely, etc., etc.? And then all the other issues I raised about this one person. It would be useful. You see, I think it is time, Chair, that we in Parliament take this role very seriously. Because somehow, when these officials work with each other, you don't know what the relations they have because somehow these things didn't perform through the test. Now, I'm not accusing anyone, but I don't really know this department. We just got a new lead. But at least what we need to do is put a system in place that all of us are happy that things are working clearly in this department. I hope it happens in other departments as well. So I'm sorry for waffling on a bit, but you know, this is really. When the AD's report came, I was absolutely shocked. I was shocked, that there are actually, quite openly accepted, that there are government officials that are actually benefiting from the bond. For me, this is just something I don't understand. I can't think how that can happen. So that is why I want us, Chair, if possible, to make this thing a proper institutionalized process. I'm happy that the DG is already pointing out that they themselves are putting things in place. But you see, the one problem, I can just give you a hint, DG. The one big problem is not the junior people that are going to be out and have to report.
your stock, your DDT, that's the people you should be watching and know where they are. Because when they're not in office, I mean, we had a guy in the department, he's at a just below DDT level.
He was actually a consultant. Outside the department. And everyone said that. Everyone knew
this person. I'm HR, he's an HR person. Running a consultancy, he said, now I lose my spare time at night. So these kind of things, we have to find out, is this happening in this department? And put mechanisms in place to check it regularly, and you must report to us regularly, over and above the equipment. That would be my proposal.
Thank you very much, Jerry. We would obviously just get guidance from the council about how we think for. But we, just for the sake of the record, and just to address the honourable members, we do take these issues very seriously. And unfortunately, to date, or I don't know what the difference is, but to date, we only know of one identified case where there has been a specific challenge that has been reported. But should obviously other issues come to the surface, we will obviously take them up and issues for the government. But in terms of our reporting and reporting, we will obviously take this into account and we will make the relevant report to this committee when we do it and to give us our report. So that's the second question that was raised was the one that was raised by Honourable Member Kumana with regard to the irregular expenditure of the tune of 5.1 million. This is an issue that I took up immediately when I was appointed because I had a look at the management list and I noted that there was that irregular expenditure to the tune of 5.1 million. And the account that I got or the report that I got from executive and corroborated obviously by the management letter was that this amount was spent on this irregular expenditure was in relation to a travel agent that was utilized and some of the challenges also related from our human resource activities of the department. In relation to the travel agent, what was specifically happening is that money was being taken from the travel budget for activities that are not necessarily travel related. I then immediately wrote a letter to the relevant travel agencies to investigate as to why this was taking place, and we are in the process of awaiting the report from the travel agencies indicating as to why such conduct is being undertaken. We do obviously, depending on the report we get from the travel agents, we intend and then dealing with the relevant members of staff that were involved in such activities to then make, the report that we get from the travel agents will inform the steps that will take against the relevant members of staff should there be a need to take such steps. With regard to the human resource transgressions and payment of performance bonuses and provision of leave, sick leave without getting sick slips, we have taken steps with regard to the individuals concerned and there have been suspensions that are currently underway and we are undertaking an investigation with regard to specific transgressions. And once the investigation has been completed, we'll then make a decision on whether or not we will proceed with the disciplinary hearing because the investigation that's being undertaken by an external third-party agency will inform the way forward by the department with respect to this specific transgression. We expect to have a report on this within the next 2 weeks, which will then inform the steps that will be taken and against the specific individual steps which will be taken. So I'd just like to assure the committee that these irregularities are receiving attention from myself and they have been noted and we are taking steps with regard to those specific challenges. The issue on notice number 34, I'll just ask my professor to see if that was not in the annual report. But before she does that, I think it's also important for me to just deal with the question about the independent producers. There was a question with regard to what is happening to the clearing Friday dependent producers that are allegedly owed money by the FACC. From a shareholder point of view, we are doing everything in our power to assist the FACC with the liquidity challenges. In the recent past, we assisted them with motivating, particularly that they be given a specific allocation to allow them to continue with their operations into the immediate future. But over and above that allocation that has recently been released to the FABC, we are also in the process of assisting them with the motivation to National Trading that they get guarantees from government to the system to go out into the open market and raise additional funding in order to help them to sustain their operations and deal obviously with the individuals that are over the SABC until the end of the financial year. But I think it's also important to just indicate that we are not just giving them money to spend at leisure. There are specific controls and measures that are being attached to that specific money so that we don't to those specific allocations so that we don't find ourselves in a similar situation a few years down the line. And at some point in time we will obviously be finalizing a shareholder contract with these amendments terms and conditions under which we then expect the SABC to operate in relation to the grant, not the grant, in relation to the additional funding that they would have been able to secure either directly from government or through their systems of government. And this loan, these funding that is being provided to the SABC would be expected to be retained so that then there is that specific obligation on the SABC to not only just consume the money but must come up with mechanisms by which these amounts will then be paid back to government for the undertaking, well, for the amounts that have been sent to the SABC. And in relation to the discussions that we've had with the SABC, they have indicated that they expect to have a positive return by 2012. So the problem will not be solved overnight. We still expect that there will be a few challenges with liquidity, but we expect that to continue as a going concern until such time as liquidity and a positive balance is reflected in the account of the SABC. Okay, I'll then request my people to then deal with the issue of Lord Sedico. I'll ask them to deal with the question on the 500 million for the humanities school and see if we'll be able to do that. Honourable member, the note that is being read to be actually reflected on, it's actually note 26 on the annual report on the financial statement. It is on page 156. Where the irregular expenditure is being reflected. Maybe if I may also, while I'm speaking to the irregular expenditure, just highlight that the irregular expenditure that occurred was as a result of, in most cases, officials did not request three quotations as they were supposed to, but one quotation for a transaction. But this did not include process of tenders.
So thank you. In terms of the issue of FinTech, the technology that Honourable Mayor was speaking about is the WiMAX. The WiMAX is a problem. Once FinTech designed the network, the intent of the entity based on the WiMAX to be used with the national wireless platform. But because there are only allocated 500 users, now the issue was to roll out that technology, not only do you need to roll out that station, let's say you've got a base station in the Eastern Cape and Northern Cape, but the bulk of the land was going to be absorbed by what you call it is a bird hole, and that is when you connect all the base stations, say you've got a problem in Pretoria where you have to have a link that connects a station in Eastern Cape and Northern Cape to Pretoria. And that's where the bulk of the cost was going to be, because this is a new network. Now, what FinTech shows is that instead of rolling out WiMAX, let them rather consider a satellite where you've got a thing at a school and you just connect a point. Now, the issue was that for us, it wasn't about connecting a school. It was about connecting a school, but ensuring that the areas that are in the surroundings of the school are also connected, hence the issues of the WiMAX. So the issue is not the technology, the issue is the lack of funding, and then center shows that this lets them consider an alternative technology that could resolve the funding, but it doesn't resolve the bigger agenda of providing ICT in education, health and all that.
See that this issue of the center funding, I mean the open record, we've been playing with the trend for at least 2 years now. Has surgery increased the funding? But it hasn't. They say we can roll it out fast. Surgery says that we're not happy with your plan. And we hear this over and over again. Now, ultimately, somebody has to give us here, and that's going to be the fact. What is the policy director? What are we trying to achieve? And if we have haven't got the money, then you must modify our plan. So we can't keep having a plan on the table. But it's not working in second.
Maybe just address the specific issue of the Nairobi school. The challenge from the Department of Schools has been that an amount was allocated to the project, but obviously the amount was not the amount as requested by the principal. Now, the argument that the department has put forth, which was also echoed by National Treasury, was that even if there hasn't been a full allocation, at least less than the utilization of the allocated amount. And because there was no concrete plan with regard to the utilization of the allocated amount in this financial year, the decision was then that that the 500 million then be relocated to a different project, which is the broadcast digital migration project, just for the current financial year, but we are not terminating the project. In the next financial year, if we get a proper plan from Centec, then money will be looked at to be allocated to the specific project. But for current purposes, this has been brought, this specific project will be held on, put on hold in relation to the relation to taxation because of the budgetary reallocations that have been undertaken by that process.
Because the issue is, I always say, you know, this was key in rural areas like ours. They are saying that it's something which is planned, that they must pay. Because if you go to the current way of doing things, they must make research, they will project and so on. Now we're talking about kids who can have access to internet to be able to do research and other things. Now, I hear arguing about the connectivity of the entire area, but we also got a specific focus to the key levels. To that, I'm saying there's a project here. What we want is wireless because we need a broader connectivity. But also, what the interest with the education is going on every day. Those kids need to do research. But we cannot do that because we want the wireless, the broader scale of connectivity. I'm saying sometimes you can't get everything. Maybe I corrected that maybe some of these things to be removed because you cannot come up on understanding what exactly you want to achieve around the particular project. Because it is also to look at those who are sitting there, who are doing research on a daily basis, and they cannot have access to this research like those who are fortunate. What I'm saying to them is that the issue of the wireless and the issue of the research with the wireless is really so that they connect the two. So that this is the result of the foundation in terms of committing them and so on. But I think the point is that the difference is the wider connectivity than the focus and our focus on the school. But what I would say is our first is to keep it on school. So that method is not being resolved. Once we are trying to connect to us, by the sake of the method that will keep us affected to the present everything, like anyone else could access to different information and other things.
Is that it to follow up?
You know, I think that subject to what Mr. Kowani has said, I think they made the right decision to take the money away, subject to what he said. But the problem is because of people's incompetence, children are suffering, not the sense that you. But if you, you know, I'm wondering, isn't this time that we know now that Centec clearly does not have the capability to put this plan together. I mean, you give them 500 million, they don't draft the plan, so you take the money back. Now we're saying, but they're now going to draft the plan, and then they're going to come. Well, I can guarantee you that come that time, it's not going to be ready. I'm wondering why we don't do this as a joint project, the drafting of a project plan. Why don't we get expertise wider than Centec? You get Centec, you get Treasury, and you get the Department of Communications. Now, we can actually look at you if it's not being drafted. And we can't just keep saying, but it's Centec who's not doing the job. Isn't it time to do that? When it comes to the implementation, then clearly you let it be implemented where it has to be implemented. But it's clearly for me that we have to, in government, start taking the responsibility for drafting this plan so that we can start asking the children why we're not giving them this this capability. And I really think it's something that they should look at. So that Treasury, Department of Communications, and that East Center, I don't think who else you add to it, but they all three locked into this process. So that when we ask the one, they can't say, ask the other one. And so that they're all part of it. If the government agrees that this is a project that they'll be paid for, well, let government take the responsibility for the project get drafted and not give it to people that say they're not going to do it and can't do it. You know, if you give me 500 million rand to do a job, I'm going to make sure the job gets done. Now, I don't know why I think they doesn't do that, why they don't draft the plans. So I just think we need a change here, Chair. I think the one good thing is that we're taking the money and spending it where we have to. But the second thing now, to avoid what Mr. Bawani is saying, that in a year's time we're going to again say to children, sorry, you're still not having this system because people haven't drafted the plan. I would really propose that, I don't, we don't need an answer today, but consideration be given to that. So that the responsibility is now wider than the joint project for drafting the project. Until it's agreed to, then you can decide who implements it.
This is exactly what the previous committee of communication said. It's got in national version, they have sent it here and they have the now, if I remember correctly, it might have been early last year or even previous year. So this thing has been on there. And that's exactly what we get. Yes, can you go and catch this project together? Who is in the collective? Especially in this case, we are very good to secure the necessary funding for this thing to grow. I think the truth is that we are at the same point. Because the best thing you is not even at the best, we have to go to education. In identifying the schools and the patients. So the reality is that we haven't made this thing. But I'll allow a follow-up and then to take it.
Thank you, Jesus, and I'm not technically skilled very well, but I've spoken to a lot of people in the ICT world, and we've got the capability in South Africa, just to connect with Mr. Delanga, to do this, or what is needed. The technical people in South Africa are there. It's a question of lack of political will, and it just flicking a switch and it can be happened. All about political world. Thank you, dear person.
By way of response, I think it's important that for purposes of this committee's record that we say that it is true that a team comprising of the Department of Communications, Department of Education, Treasury, and a few other departments have was put in place to discuss the issue of the rollout the rollout of internet connectivity to schools. The details of obviously the working of this meeting, I will leave at a later point. But I think it's also important to just also state that the issue of internet connectivity to schools is not a project that is exclusively within the sphere of the United States. There are other initiatives that are in place to make sure that we do bring internet connectivity to schools. For instance, you will hear from the Isafa presentation later that they have been, and there are internet labs that have been built in schools, which is one of the initiatives that the department has to put in place in order to ensure that there is internet connectivity to schools. There's also the issue of the e-rate. I'm informed that the CASA has put in place a regulation with regards to e-rate, which then obviously is also another mechanism that is assisting in relation to ensuring that there is internet connectivity to schools. But over and above that, the operators within the industry also have universal service obligations, among which is the requirement that there is internet connectivity to schools. So there are various initiatives that are underway to ensure that the increasing of internet connectivity to schools and obviously the mechanisms of the and the parameters within which this should be done. Yes, it is accepted that there are specific challenges with regard to using this initiative, but certainly the e-rate and the issue of the internet service provision for internet connectivity to schools. But we are discussing with the Department of Education in an attempt to come up with a holistic solution on how we actually overcome those specific challenges. So we are in a continuous discussion with regard to that. And as a department, we are in the process of actually preparing a report, which we are going to present to the minister, who will represent the cabinet, with regard to the number of schools that have been connected to date ever since the promulgation of the Electronic Communications Act. So we're actually in the middle of an exercise where we're going to present a report with regard to the kind of work that has been done by the different players in the industry in relation to ensuring increased access by public schools to internet connectivity. And once that is available, once that has been finalized, we will obviously submit to the committee for the information. I'll ask Rosie to just add to what the group.
Thank you, DC. What we did as a discussion, taking note of the challenges that we're facing with centers, we feel that we can't stop with the project. And the discussion was, let's look at alternative connectivity. And in discussions with DOE, we then saw that you've got a number of operators in the industry. Yes, there are 27,000 schools, but it doesn't mean that at every school there's no coverage. A certain percentage of the schools are covered by certain operators. It could be MTN, it could be Vodacom. Now, this project is spearheaded by the Deputy Minister of Education, our Deputy Minister in terms of communications, and it's also in the attendance. I think this is the Deputy Minister of Health and GST, Economic Development. So that is the practical work. Now, the steering committee of the Deputy Minister, they have approved the connectivity plan. What the connectivity plan mainly speaks to is connecting schools without the dependence on centers, saying the number of operators in the industry. If a certain school in the Eastern Cape is covered by SLC, that school will apply for E-rate through SLC or through MTN and through whoever. Now, the second challenge that we have that I think we talk to is, yes, we've got 50% e-rate, but at the schools that are zero fees and whatever, who then pays the finance? I think that's another problem that we have to deal with. And that is the issue that we still need to resolve. The subsidization of the schools that cannot afford at all. So we've got schools that cannot afford. Even if you say the 30% that they will be able to afford. That's what the problem is.
Yes, sir, that's what you have to do. Yes. That's quite a debate.
I appreciate what the department is saying. But, let me ask what your point is there. If you've got all this number of indications, then my request can be that, because I'm sure the department might get it. If you can help the audit of all these indications, it was the ICASA obligation, it was the E-rate, it was the inability, and it was also the NEPAD, also the NEPAD, and so on and so on. So that you will put it on one stick and say, what is the roadmap around the city where we are? So I'm still, let me say, we do a comprehensive audit on what we are doing, so we might be participating. Maybe imagine I said that anyway we're fighting for the marriage, but it's not necessary to go that route anymore because by the way other things are certain and so on, but we are not sure what is left and where and so on. So my proposal said that it's possible for the department to do such a thing. So that if that's the only thing that we're going to say, so what current says seems to be a matter. The way that the NICASA is giving other people obligations, they go to e-rate, to what they in addition, also there is someone in the school. I'm sure for students in Malang around that particular mechanism, so just to know what you are doing, where we are, so that we know how to move forward. And then maybe you can come and share to the issue of the Dinaledi school and check it whether it is still necessary in the form which was initially or conceptualized or proposed to us in the school. But currently, we have the feeling that they were just all of in almost everything. You pass out for their own things, which they might come up with, the so that to put it there. And that's for what I would do in a way.
Do you have a follow-up on this matter?
I just want to say
Firstly, I think what I find a little bit lacking is there must be a key strategic driver of this process. At this stage, it is clearly there's a major responsibility on the Department of Education to provide information on which schools are connected and which are not. Secondly, we must look at the combination of initiatives that have already been taken, so that we know what are the schools that are covered by the needs by all the other university access agencies, and also mobile networks. But then lastly, it always works in this manner, that when you have two or three departments that are part of a steering committee, nobody is really taking full accountability to steer a strategic process. And I think we will have to determine, is this not the role where we should really have this department being the champion of independent services, and making sure that the process is managed with set goals, with trying to evaluate performance, to get certain officials really to hold them accountable for performance against those set targets, etc. Because otherwise, in a year from now, we might be finding ourselves in the same position again. And we understand that there's very often much more politics between the departmental officials than in college, where you have certain more senior officials in one department wanting to play a role rather than another department, etc. So we understand all of that. But ultimately, and that is why we need clarity on who is going to be a driver of this country. And I think in the new administration, we need clarity on that. Because as we indicated, that, well, as we have been informed, as we read through the standing document, I think it's still a key concern. It's not given the central space in the planning for the nation in the next 10 to 20 years. And we are lagging behind. We're lagging behind in Africa. We're lagging behind, well, not really there, but somewhere, and it's certainly amongst the developing countries, we are really not lacking it. So this is really going to become a key driver for this department in the next 5 years. And I really feel, Chair, that we will have to discuss some other resolutions to deal with, get the ministers involved to understand how important it is for us to hear. This is one program, but it's actually a huge strategic direction that we need to now see movement and to expand. Thank you.
Chair, only two questions. Now, one thing that I want to say is that if they tell this next thing to come for that life or strategy, that represents the cancellation of contracts and different departments.
I thought you were following up on the show. We can't do the further question, but the number of people reading it. Can we change to that? I think we are agreeing at the moment that we would want a comprehensive school connectivity report. I said we are agreeing at the moment that we want a full and comprehensive school connectivity report. So you outline all the different things that we can by testing everything, etc., to see how we can coordinate when we get the issue with the formally resolved just now. There are still, I think, a number of issues that have been important before I take the application.
Thank you very much, Chair. As I indicated, we have a principle to prepare a similar report to the Minister to put to Cabinet, so we'll obviously make a final of that report available to the Commission. And we'll extend it according to the specifications that have been put forth by the Commission. I will then request Councillor to review the questions relating to the execution of the second department and how we also, of course, how we make sure that the working of the department works to the ground. But on that, we shall also ask several questions.
With regard to the expertise, obviously the expertise, remember we use example of the complement of grants to the industry, we've got a similar problem. I mean, sometimes we get industry people coming to the department and vice versa. Within the parameters of the prescript by the public, Department of Public Service and Administration, we do apply the mechanism strategy, but I know in the last couple of months we've been looking at how to sharpen how we think in strategy, and not just apply for office, but also look at the whole issue of succession planning and career planning as being the key element of that thinking strategy. And then we also asked a question about the size of departments, whether it's national or regional. We are one of the departments only at national level. No current function on provincial level. And that is where the issue of how we make sure that our policies as a member are focused through to the ground coming into play. Because government has a couple of national departments with no combined function in the partnership, that is why the Intergovernmental Relations Act was promulgated a couple of years back. So we have a unit that looks at how can we work with other government departments, but also all three spheres of government to make sure that there's understanding of our policies and to make sure that whatever policies we have, it is consulted or you could experience an impact on all those levels. Then we also, and FEMA will just address that issue of the Intergovernmental Relations Forum, because the act that I referred to also makes reference to the establishment of such a forum, which is the equivalent of other departments, what they call members, because government departments with provincial departments or provincial governments, they're the members. And I think at this point, can I just ask FEMA to add on the work of the Intergovernmental Relations Forum?
Honourable Chair and honourable members, just on this point, by observation, I would refer the members to page 4 of the report. Basically, I just retained the provisions of the Intergovernmental Relations Act of 2005. It's on this basis that we established the Intergovernmental Relations Forum, such as IGRF. Mainly, this forum is set by the Minister of Communication, the Department of Communication, the Minister of Transportation and Administration. Do consider policies which are developed by the Ministry, and in this case, we have had the broadband policy discussed there a number of times. The broadcast communication policy also discussed, even including projects that we discussed in the connectivity and the control of the in relation to the benefits as it relates to the training that we provide to young people. Indeed, we have observed that the young people who often go through the training do get jobs after a time, but we do keep a database of these young people in the department. Even those that we have been able to establish e-cooperatives within the model approach. We have also observed within the National Youth Service Program of the department that some of these young people, you deploy them in certain centers, and at the start point, because they've got job opportunities, because they are not skilled, they are able to get the program in that manner. So it is quite a beneficial model. Thank you.
Given
there's still
two more questions that I want to answer, the issue of whether our top management is top-leading in comparison with the rest of the department. Now, it depends on what is defined as top management. In our department, if we talk about top management, that would be the DG, the DVD, as well as the chief directors. And in our staff establishment, that is 59. You are 59 posts at that level out of the total of 429. Now, I was really good with matches, so I can't give you the same, but I think it's a good balance. There was also a question on the issue of the compensation of the employees, the increase that has from the previous reporting period to this reporting period, and the question was if it would be a more position and would we look to increase the salary? And the answer is yes to both. We have, over the past 3 years, established a new structure that has eight positions, and we have employed more people to fill that vacant position. But as we would recall that in government every year, government has an annual salary increase. So that goes up normally, and we budget for that.
And the question on slide number 21, and I'm not asking any questions.
Thank you, Dee Dee. When public people are awarded the hospital community, it was not just the fact that the infrastructure that we had was capable of giving the capacity. It was based on the fact that we had the capability. Now, if you look at the capacity requirements of FIFA, there was no way that the existing infrastructure platform in 2004 could have carried the traffic, both in terms of the cost and the access. What happened is that it so happened that Telkom was busy with their own network evolution. They were upgrading their own call. So we didn't have to pay for them. Then I think they paid about 50 million to upgrade their phone so that they're able to carry the traffic. But it wasn't just for carrying the traffic of FIFA, but it was just a network evolution to deal with the increasing traffic. Now, Telkom made it very clear that from that point, they don't have the requirement to roll out a certificate into the stadium and all this, because the requirement from FIFA was to take the traffic from the stadium, which is in Mpumalanga, to the ICC, which is in Nagoya, in Johannesburg. You take a certificate. And that one thing they say, the traffic needs to be rerouted to a second fiber link. So you've got two links that should not have a single point of failure. Now, the role that we then had to play as government was to ensure that we covered the last mile. While covering the last mile, because we are the people that signed the guarantee. And unfortunately, the guarantee was signed with the fact that we said we would upgrade the infrastructure that conforms to the world class. And from then, it was written up from our side to say, if you look at the design and what is required, Telkom gave us a quote that to roll out the access in terms of at all the three stadiums, including the ICC. The figure would then be 300 plus another 350 between the next 10 years. So it's a natural amount.
Just around you paid out 600 million to get in the last time you said this current time.
We haven't fully paid. We paid 600, even though we did on the level of the board. That's not fully the entire amount because the project for me is based on the military market.
Okay. Every couple of the questions, I saw a number of hands. Okay. All right, I've got lots of questions. I'm going to go to Aaron Jen. What exactly is the relationship of Telkom to fiber to the telecom? It is previously we were told that it's a listed company, it doesn't report to Parliament, listed board of the Bangalore Stock Exchange and New York Stock Exchange. But recently I've read that they have now been delisted from the Bangalore Stock Exchange. So is it just an entity now? And what exactly is the line of report? Yes, because you see, previously, when we tried to talk to the previous committee, we simply told them that you don't reach out from report to file it. But they used public money, as we said that. So, who exactly do they report to other than to the board and the chair? Are there any other lines of reporting? The first committee would certainly like to get that from here to account for the service. So that's the first question I had. Secondly, the TNT. Now, it's another bone of contention with that. In the
again, the previous committee, given the last meeting of the former DD, I think from February this year, this issue has come up. What exactly is it? The President of the National Commission, the year now that the state of education is constructed and is set up, it's located in the DOC. If it is a presidential for a commission, shouldn't it be the president? Shouldn't it be playing the overall coordination role of the central government champion for the strategic sector? What might it be? And we, I have indicated that we wanted a review of the strategic sector. Let me move to Kuku and then to the CDC, your question for me.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairperson. I have a question specifically for the DG, which relates to policy direction versus policy development. I read in the media this weekend, I just have to look it up, so I'm going to quote you, Ms. Mushala, just to correct me if it's wrong. We have a program of action that has specific timelines. We expect in May next year to have given a policy directive on all the services. This will include mobile interconnection, broadband, international calls, SMS, and retail tariffs. Now my question is, I understand potentially with regards to public outcry, the urgency which has been felt on the issue of mobile termination, but given the 60 days, or the 30 days of public comment and the 30 days of regulated comment, is it not engaging in a zero-sum game where more time is devoted to issuing policy directives on specific issues instead of developing overall policy, drafting it, developing it, allowing for public comment, and then giving us as legislators and the regulator as the regulator and the broadcaster and so on and so forth the policy tools with which to do our job? What I mean is this not a form of micromanaging, and it is not happening at the expense of your overall mandate listed in Program 3, which is to develop policy, telecom policy, broadcasting policy. Now, I know you released a broadcast policy, I think you're working on radio spectrum, and there's one more over post, yeah. So you released a couple of policies for comment. Why are we not doubling up with all these policy directions? And I understand that they're provided for in the legislation, and the minister can issue policy directions, but it's incredibly time-consuming. And the process for policy development, which as an honorary iterator, will help us do our job and help the other entities do their job, rather than the minister just telling us what to do. And will give us a more sound base from which to do our work. To replicate some of these processes, because this may be replicated, the public comments are replicated. Is this not an unnecessary use of time and resources? And are you not afraid of creating the impression that the government wants to micromanage this? Thank you.
Thank you. Trends and developing around those issues,
but if we don't have a new entitlement as part of the package that we have in place, specifically a focus on state policy, which is the radio frequency policy. This is one of those critical, resources that we have as a country. And it would be very important for us to finalize this project. It actually a little concerned because the PCA was promulgated so long ago. Why do we still not have that policy? It says here, first draft of the national frequency spectrum policy discussion document was together. Do we have an indication of when this project would be concluded and which other policy, critical policy documents are outstanding? Because without that, there are certain bodies and institutions that are reporting to the department. And the one is usually waiting for the other to perform. And if you want to keep another institution accountable, then they can easily say that there is no policy that was drafted by the department and by the minister. So can you please just have an indication? And also, how do they see this radio frequency? Because from discussions with people in the industry, it could be a very valuable resource that we have. And we could look at auctioning it in all sorts of very sort of interesting ways of making sure that it works for us best. As a country, that must really very effectively manage such resources. Could they please just indicate us when, and obviously at some stage, we would like to have a copy of those documents that they will be accepting.
It is the last question.
Thank you, Chair. No, I wanted to check whether is there a claim on that light or frontage that regulates the utilization of contact centers, because in terms of the another report, if you look at the page 88, there is a lot of matter that can be used. And there are two court waters on this. Where you find the other contact center was supposed to do a broadcast in this manner, because it's public comment, and it costed 20 million. But sometimes for the members of the court, any event as a member of public and things like that, maybe it was at the same time, we also to know whether are we getting paid for our money, because nothing or getting the court. This consulting for Africa. But my concern is whether create a strategy within the development when how we utilize the effect of the consulting. The last question is then, the department, are you using the avocado to recruit your staff?
With respect to the specific consultant that has been identified, this consultant was utilized to undertake the study that we have used on the arguments that put forth with regard to cost to communicate. So whether we've been able to get value for money, we believe that out of the companies that were considered, that actually tended for the specific process and that had the capability to deliver the information and packages and packages in a manner that we believe is appropriate. This was the cheapest company out of the three entities that had submitted. And we believe that because of the time constraints, because they were in a very short space of time within which it is expected that they would get investigate, research, and prepare and present a report, we feel that the amount that was spent was reasonable under the circumstances, and a clear objective procedure was followed with regard to the appointment of these specific consultants. And if the committee wants to obviously want or would like to have sight of those particular documents, we would make them available to the committee to have sight of as to the methodology that we would like to appoint the specific consultants. But I'll hand over to you, not to just lay out the general procedure when it comes to appointment of consultants and kind of a little bit of rotation.
The departments are provided guidelines through the National Treasury on how on the process followed in identifying and appointing service providers, with specifically appointment of consultants to provide professional services, which is what the department is utilizing as a guide when you appoint a service provider. They also provide principles as and when there are changes with regards to such processes. So the department follows the guidelines from Treasury in this regard. Thank
you. The problem is because of the information of a lot of our positions, we don't always get all the correct applicants when we follow the normal recruitment practices by advertising in the country. So we would then use, I think we've got two companies on contract that we would utilize to assist us in getting the correct person for that position.
And with regard to the policy questions, I got two questions from our honourable members with respect to the methodology that the department was utilising with respect to our policy formulation. I think with regard to policy formulation, to some extent we are playing a form of catch-up game because there are policies that are long overdue and that need to be put in place for effective management, quote-unquote, of the industry and the developments that are taking place in the industry. For instance, you will note that CASA has been licensing broadband for the past 6 years, but it's only now that we're putting in place the broadband policy. Even on the national frequency spectrum and policy, spectrum has been licensed by CASA and they continue to license spectrum, but it's only now that we're putting in place the policy. We have had a lot of debates in the department and to leave the matters as is or to proceed and actually try and put some mechanism in place. We felt that it was important that we do not use this as is, but put in place the relevant mechanism to ensure that we then deal with the challenges that, well, not, let me not say challenges, but we deal with the development within the sector so that we don't compound the problem with this policy banking management. We do accept that we are in a form of overdrive, but we don't believe it can be a permanent state of affairs. We believe it's just a necessary intervention right now to make sure that all the policies are put in place, so that by the end of the financial year, we have put those policies in place, and then we can have a more predictable environment within which we'll operate. Just with regard to the extent of consultation, we will obviously ensure that there is compliance with the EPA. There is no intention to transgress the provisions of the EPA. And in doing so, we will obviously have to take a public process whereby we get comments from the public. And the comments from the public will then influence the position going forward. So if the public comes back and says that they believe that certain policies are not necessary for the proper regulation of the industry, and there is a strong sentiment that specific policy should not be put in place, then obviously that will be the position that will be taken forward. This approach of procedure will follow whether it be in the policy formulation or in the provision of a policy direction, because in terms of the EPA, even the policy direction goes out to public comment and the public input is involved. So all the processes of the department are subject to public scrutiny. But I think it is important to understand that there is an element of catch-up and also putting in place the necessary information that are required going forward. Now the issue of whether we are micromanaging, I wouldn't think that these installations by the department amount to micromanaging. I think the installations are made from the premise of ensuring that we fill the vacuum that actually exists. And unfortunately, the only way as a policy giver we can actually fill those vacuums is through two certificates of intervention in terms of that, which is the policy directive and the termination of the policy. I'm sort of saying that there is no other definitive intervention that the department could actually undertake. So that is why these mechanisms will be utilized in order to implement the specific issues. But having said that, I think I need to just re-emphasize about this. There will be a 30-day comment period, and those comments will obviously be taken into account before any finality is taken with regard to specific issues. And I think it's also important for me to just emphasize that the department is working towards creating what the minister referred to in his budget speech as the integrated ICT policy. Now, if we have an integrated ICT policy, it needs to take into account all the different elements that exist within the ICT space. So in doing that, we need to obviously take reference into specific policies that will then feed into the final integrated ICT policy. But there is no intention of fast-tracking it to finalize it within the financial year, but we need to at least indicate what measures will be in place towards the creation of that specific ICT policy. So that's what all the initiatives are aimed at actually achieving, and that's what we intend on putting forward, we intend on doing going forward with regard to the initiatives we're putting in place. There were questions with regard to the TMA.
Sorry, Mr. Chairperson, can I just intervene? I don't know if my question has been answered. The responsibility of dealing with the sector isn't just the communications department, it's also the communications portfolio committee in terms of legislation, and then all the different sector entities, including the regulator, which has then performed their function. Now, my impression is that by issuing a series of directions and having a timeline for policy direction and none for policy development, because again, we haven't seen any particular timeline for it. I think it's great that you're talking about an integrated ICT strategy, it's a methodology, and it will inform our work in terms of looking at the ECA. But we can't do that without a concrete policy development process, which the policy directive. They cut us out as the regulator. They cut us out, as the legislator. They cut us out of the process. And they insert the minister and the department straight into individual particular issues. For example, on the question of NPR, one of the key things that came out of the public hearings is that mobile termination is not the only thing that we need to address in order to bring tariffs down. There are other major issues that we as a committee need to look at as regulators and as legislators, and that the ICASA has to look at as the regulator, and which also has to be informed by policy. But in the absence of that policy, we're kind of flying blind. And I absolutely understand you are working in overdrive, you're coming into an environment where there has been a policy vacuum. But surely the answer to that is not just a series of band-aids, which may or may not ignore other problems, and which will meet our ability as legislators to also intervene in terms of making it easier, for example, for ICASA to conduct its market study, and so on and so forth. So I want to understand, why the department isn't putting the same focus and the same effort into finalizing timelines and stringent timelines for the implementation of policies, so that we can also get involved. Because otherwise, we're basically going to sit on the sidelines and, the department is going to be addressing the individual issues. And yes, potentially this will feed into the final policy, but how long will we have to wait? And what if we do start looking at amendments to the ETA and they end up not being in line with driving policy because we haven't received any? I mean, do you see what I mean? I'm just trying to understand whether you acknowledge or whether you see that potentially this could even, about exacerbating the problem, but it doesn't necessarily solve the root problem. It simply is an intervention which is short term and which will actually impede our ability and the regulator's ability to do its job.
Thank you very much for that question. Clarification. I think it's just the things in my response that I felt were given, so I didn't actually deal with them specifically. If you recall what I presented, the outcome of the study that was undertaken by the MIT, I outlined the program of action, which enumerated a number of interventions that the department will actually undertake from a policy point of view that would actually then facilitate the bringing down of the cost of communication. Among these interventions, so we had a multitude of interventions, not only the mobile termination rate. The only reason mobile termination rate has been a focal point is because obviously that is the topical issue that is on the table for discussion. And in the interview that you quoted, the first thing that you quoted was that I spoke about the program of action. And that is the program of action that is linked to that study that we presented to this particular committee. And in that program of action, there is specific policy interventions that the department is going to undertake. So it is not just simply the policy direction. There will be specific policies that need to be formulated by the department, among which is broadband policy, the issue of social protection, which will then facilitate the integrated ICT strategy that the department will then put in place. Now, the one thing that is causing me some a bit of confusion is that the question that you may ask about how long we will have to wait. Because by your own input, you have indicated that the fast-tracking approach is not necessarily the preferred one. And this is what exactly what I've indicated, that we are fast-tracking, but we are alive to the fact that we need to obviously get public input and follow these processes in doing so. So in that light, we obviously have to play a balancing act and ensuring that we get the relevant input, but we make sure that the change does not stop. Now, with regards to that, so I cannot obviously give you a timeline, because obviously it depends on what we are going to get from the public, and sitting here, I cannot anticipate what the public will actually tell us in the public submission. So we need to get that seriously considered, input it into the document, and then finalize those specific policy information. But with regards to the amendments to the ECA, that is one of the initiatives that the department is working on. In the course of the discussions in September, we did indicate that we would obviously take into account what the council will put on the table with regard to their proposals in terms of the amendments to Chapter 10, which then indicated is a great hindrance for them with regard to meeting the obligations and related to dealing with the fastest service, among which is the mobile termination rate. We are in the process as a department of not only taking into account the proposed amendments that the council would like to have done to Chapter 10, but we have also invited some of the entities that the department, the force of the department, to also make submissions with regard to what they would prefer, what they would recommend be incorporated as proposed amendments to the ECA. So we are in the process of finalizing those proposed amendments, and those will be introduced to Parliament if obviously approved by Parliament, will be introduced to Parliament in this specific quarter. So there is every intention to obviously make sure we have the policy foundation for this exercise. But by the same token, we obviously need to have a multi-pronged strategy to ensure that we do achieve what we would like to achieve. So it's not by the purposes, but not in isolation, but in conjunction, holistically rather than as isolated purposes. And I will obviously make the program of action available to the committee once again, because it is going to serve before cabinet tomorrow with revised timelines as a consequence of the discussions that have been undertaken in this committee. And obviously, the undertaking by the department as well. So we have a comprehensive program of action, but once again, I want to be making available to the committee with revised timelines in relation to the different policy interventions that have been taken place. I hope that addresses the proposition. Just to deal with the issue of the performance management agreement, the question that is asked with respect to that. Unfortunately, not all the performance management agreements are in place. It is an issue that I have taken up with the different entities that are DPGs. There are specific individuals within employees within the department that have indicated that they are not comfortable with the performance agreements that have been put in place. So we'll obviously, well, with the elements of the performance agreement. But we are in the process of consulting with those specific individuals to see if we can resolve the particular matter or obviously amend the performance agreements where necessary. But Kirsten will obviously give details with respect to that. But I'd just like to emphasize that this is a minority of the employees where there is we have challenges about finalizing performance agreements. It is not the majority. And we have taken cognizance of the issues that are raised in the management letter. By the Auditor General with regard to our friends and their trying to resolve that. Okay, so I don't want to add anything to that. The questions that were raised by yourself with regard to the CMC and the role of the CMC, I think it's important to indicate that this question of the role of the CMC has been raised on a number of different occasions. And the department is looking into this specific matter. But having said that, we also have to take cognizance of the fact that there are members of staff that work within the CMC, and there are obviously major issues associated with listening to the research of the CMC and the manner in which that is done. So the only, we believe as a department that the only legally sound mechanism that can be put in place will be obviously to have an institutional review or some study that will go into whether or not the CMC is an entity that we should keep within the department and maybe rename it or rework the process, or it is an entity that we will need to have relocated elsewhere. But I think that I think I need to just caution and indicate that this is something that is still being looked into, and we would obviously need the list of concurrence with regard to specifically the role of the CMC going forward. I know that addresses the concerns by the paper. We did indicate that you have raised questions historically. But unfortunately, in the recent situation, this is how far we've been able to get the matter. But we are obviously looking forward to having an institutional review to cater not only for the needs of employees, but also protecting the organization going forward. So that is a good review that we can take into account.
I accept the response that you've given, right? What? You see, it's interesting you use the word entity. It's not a legal entity. It's not there. It's not a reporting entity. As I understand it now, it's a unit doing it in the department. And that's our difficulty that I think we use the entity. Please be setting up all the sub-components and giving it nice sense and then specifically 5 minutes. What is the answer? Then we just sum up all the responsibilities, but the system is creating more and more and more structure. What is the point of the exercise? So, if you say there's a review on your way at time, I think we would want to get certainty about this matter sooner rather than later. It's a matter that we have also raised with the Minister Colin Chagani, who is in charge of this institution and the review of the environment of its own facilities and those kinds of things. And we asked him that shouldn't he be taking over this? I think he would give us a degree of concern and a degree of taking better time. But it's a matter that I think we want to get some progress in both sooner rather than later.
Would obviously a concurrence and any other matter. Would it be opportunity to could give a report to the committee, general report to the reporting cycle? So that we can then that would be given to the site chair and the committee will provide a report in terms of our report to the reporting cycle. The last question is with regard to Telcom and our role as a department and what kind of doesn't understand as the role that Parliament plays with regard to Telcom. I think that's just the first issue I'd just like to make is that from my understanding, Telcom has been delisted from the New York Stock Exchange, not the Johannesburg Securities Exchange. I've got confirmation that it's the New York Securities Exchange. Now the question of reporting lines and our role as a shareholder, I think I'll just ask most of us to just deal with that and not add if there's anything else then.
Yes, thank you, Gigi. I think the issue of how the department relates to Telcom, it is a matter that has been shaped by a number of historical events that I think members are very much aware of. Going back to the time when a strategic equity partner was acquired in the form of Tintan, through to the time when an IPO was staged and also the listing in both New York and then at the Johannesburg Stock Securities Exchange.
what all those events they led to a situation where they determined the level of ownership of government in Telkom, which up to the point of listing, government was left to take 8.9% ownership. Well, that kind of ownership, it basically says that government is not government is a significant shareholder that wields a lot of influence, but is not really controlling Telkom. Because you have a bulk of a number of other shareholders, approximately 61 or so, who owns shares in Telkom. But government, of course, there was this 30% is the biggest shareholder in Telkom, and it also has significant influence to the extent that, for instance, government appoints five directors in Telkom, which is roughly about half, slightly below half of the total number of directors of Telkom. So really, there's significant influence. But also we need to realize that the Telkom is a commercial entity. So what Telkom did, which is in line with the provision that is there in the Public Finance Management Act, at some point, or they took advantage of that provision to request that they be exempted from the requirement to report in terms of the DFMA or to fulfill some of the obligations of the DFMA, citing the very fact that the commercial nature of the entity means that if they comply with some of the requirements of the Act, it might mean that they're disclosing some of the information that they consider to be competitive information. So really, what government really, the relationship is like it. Government appoints the five directors and then brief those directors to say what are the positions of government in relation, and the views of government in relation to Telkom, and what would government wish it be in relation to Telkom. I think that's all I can say. But just to underline that currently there's an exemption in place that they have subject from the Minister of Finance that they do not report. It's something that's renewable. It's an exemption that's granted over a short period of time. I think it's 3 years, if my correct, my memory serves me well. And after that 3 years, they have to again ask for another, for an extent, for another exemption.
Thank you, Chair. The question from the Honourable Member was whether we have the issue of leave and leave entitlement, specifically referring to abuse of sick leave. Yes, we have been trying to stop and receive all the leave applications, and specifically online emergency services, to make sure that within the guidelines, if it's a certain day, there must be a signal. But then also the trend, because you do have people that have been sick, so they have one day here and one day there. So these trends are monitored. When it is picked up, it is discussed with the manager, and then it will be taken through.
Thank you very much. We have a further time. Can I just indicate that we've got a number of proposals. One is that there's a pending decision of the committee that the performance management system that contracted the Tata County should be completed as quickly as we can. So that is going to be true. We're hoping that matter will be concluded by then and will be up to the and I correct in saying that the department, I mean the committee would want a full report on and the one particular case of conflict that we have and also your revised policy framework. You said that you are revising your policy for the evening.
very clearly decided to see the volunteer statement. Three, you also going to give us a report on the area still that you've extended the oxygen in this time, you said it's an investigation. It's like the report management is proven. And then the school connectivity report we need. And then finally, a report of assessment from the National Commission. We get quarterly, next quarterly. Okay, so those are follow-up sessions. Is there anything else? Have I missed anything?
I know I was not creating the fact, but now that we're talking about the report that we are expecting, and can I also request the DOC to also bring the disaggregated gender equity data of the department.
Yeah, and the disability one. Okay, so it's a breakdown of the what level of people have been employed, both in terms of gender and disability. Well, then, thank you very much for your time with me and the team. Members, we will go through lunch because we still got many plans. Before I invite them, can I just report on tomorrow's program? We were supposed to go to ESA, that's the Institute for Satellite and Software Education in Kerbo. The chief group has unfortunately not authorized our absence from Parliament for the holidays. Because tomorrow I think it's a question to the Deputy President that So, permission has been granted for us to be away at the event in Parliament for 3 o'clock. We are suggesting that we prioritize the visit to Charlton. That's to the landing station here, under the landing station, in Melbourne, which is about 45 minutes drive from here. We will leave at 8 o'clock in the morning, so you should be in Parliament at 8 o'clock. We are leaving at 8 o'clock for this. And the planning, am I correct in saying that senior officials from Telcom will be present. It was going to be a dinner previously, but I think it's now going to be a lunch with the senior executive and a proper briefing by the executive mansion to the committee. In terms of the work of the population, but that will obviously be held at the same time. And we should then be back to invite the theater. So we I'm not going to proceed to Colorado, but we will try and organize it next year for the big time. We'll see how we can make that. So it's still working up the Islamic region. So that's the program for tomorrow. 8 o'clock in the morning, we leave. Not needed. 12 days, such as we leave at 8 o'clock in the morning. So please, members, I should be there. I will continue. Thank you very much. Can we now get the Janita to do the presentation? They can't serve lunch inside the room. But it's only for lunch. It's only for the meeting. They won't serve inside, but you can bring your food inside. What? What is the penalty? There's no penalty for doing so. Thank you very much. I think we should proceed because we have been out in the field and we are able to get in there. The money is also in the very beginning of the meeting. And after we take a deal, so they say that it's a period. And I think I remember we were coming to this now, but I think we should proceed. I have indicated to the team from the mission that we were there at the place last. We take the annual report as well. So we don't want us to remember to take that to the report as well. But we take that to the finances. That's what we're reading. Just in, there's been a letter that has been circulated by a member of staff. I think we've got copies of the letter. Two documents. We want to get clarity on the allegations that have been made there so that it's upfront and we understand what is happening. So we are open to your team, and I think all of us, and if you listen to you, I think most of them are familiar to you, and you can take us to your report. Thank you, Dave.
Thank you, Chairman Ryan. Thank you, honorable member. With us this afternoon, we have Ms. Reserve Simpson, who is the chairman of the Board of Ministers. And right next to her, we have Mr. Tisa Kawashi, who is a member of the board and also the chairman of the Rolls Committee of Melissa. Sitting on my left, we have Ms. Karen Bivet, who is the CFO of Melissa. In terms of the recommendation, Chair, I think we will hand over to the CFO to talk about the financial.
Thank you, Chair. Honorable members, good afternoon. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. I would like to, at this point in time, just go directly to the report of the Auditor General, which is on page 22 and 23 of the annual report. Just to highlight the opinion expressed by the Auditor General on the financial statements for the year ending March 2009. Such indicated an unqualified audit was issued in the first instance, and with regard to the key governance responsibilities also reflected in the report, we got the Queen's scorecard. I would like very briefly to also see the directive. Covers the activities for the financial year, and that is reflected on page on starting on page 28 of the annual report. The first one deals with the board members indicating the details of the activities, the dates that were appointed, the designation, and the attendance of the various board and board of the committee meetings. Then looking at the operation results for the year, and the company's results amounted to a 1.239 million rand deficit for the current year compared to a surplus in 2001 of 1.295. And this is mainly attributable to expenditure occurred in the current period, while then funding way of having received in the prior period and classified as a surplus for the prior period. And the retention of the prior year surplus financing actually such an increased financing activity. In terms of the view of operations for the year, the total income for the company amounted to 59.5 million rand compared to 52.3 million rand for the previous year. Our capital expenditure for the period amounted to 1.7 million rand compared to 1.5 million rand for the previous period. With regard to
other main issues within the report that we have mentioned, it's like that the prior year, last year, actually had an unqualified report by the auditor general of the law of carried out. Other issues, the in the report, put by the auditor director of the monument, and then we have our fifth form of the report that we want to talk about. So in light of these main issues that have been dealt with, I would like to now speak to you about any questions that anybody might have that has been left in the financial report for any of the questions.
Do you want to just
add some
quick we have to rearrange things at the end of time. I want to couple that with the briefing on the post of the bill. I think the bill is going to catch the whole one. I thought the bill was going to be quiet. Not that I was talking about quite there. So we have to squeeze in each time back next 2 weeks. Right, I think we can proceed with the questions if there are any. comment. Any questions? Now, what is agreed upon is that they will take us only through the financials, because we were there and we know more about what operations were about and those kinds of things, so I asked them not to go into the operations side of things. They've already presented the financials, so I'm not going to be any questions.
If you look at page 13, could you perhaps just understand, there was an amount paid to a certain Mr. Lloyd for travel subsistence and reimbursement. I don't see any other payment in terms of being a permanent director. Could you perhaps just give an explanation for that? And also on the same issue, there's one of the councillors, directors, Mr. Marulka, incurred a high cost as far as reimbursement is concerned, but his independence report seems to have been very poor. So could you just get an explanation for that?
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for this presentation. And then, according to the slide that we received, the presentation, the performance against the objectives, you fell short of target. The productions of 8 productions, and you left with 4. So, what were those 8 productions, and what was it for, and what are the 4 productions that were delivered? You targeted 8, but only 8 were produced. Can you just give us clarity on that?
With regard to the reimbursement of Mr. Mendoza, it's an actual fact that he has been consumed. And maybe he needs to obtain reasons or self-commission to incur costs, and that's the reason why. He okay. Acted on the only board member of the account from our board. We will find also that an actual fact from the 2 members of the second. All right, also for the third question, which is question to you.
Thank you, Chair. Remember, the issue of content production is that this is the financial year under review. As he indicated, we had targeted to produce about 80 production, multimedia production. However, due to the unprecedented shrink in the area of commissioning of content, we found it fairly difficult to access more content projects, multimedia projects. These productions would have been productions to do, for example, we do produce content for the SABC, we do produce content for other government departments. And because of the shrinking of that market, we've experienced challenges as a small entity to even access some of the content commission projects that were out there in the industry. So that's basically the sense, the answer to the question. I think also the second part that relates to that the question of what product it's really video productions that we have done for various people. This is mainly audio video productions.
what this corresponds to Mr. Malebe. Basically, he is alleging three things. One is that the Misa equipment and property is being used for private purposes without authorization. Two, that a good number of your programs are going to be affected, although the expression is stated that most of the programs are affected. And thirdly, I think he raises some important questions about the Nigerian television funding. Nigerian television authority. Can you just get some insight into what was the arrangement with the Nigerian television authority? What was the problem? I think he seems to imply that there was a misappropriation of funds in those kinds of things. And also, I mean, who is Mr. Malebe? He's a staff member. He also claims, sorry, it's one, I think he also claims that he's head of the particular unit, but he has not contributed to the compilation of the annual report, and that has done without his knowledge. So there's a whole basket of allegations in there, but it is unusual that for a staff member to report directly to Parliament. So can you explain to us what happened to him?
Thank you, Chair. I'll start by giving you the context of this allegation.
Thank you very much, Chief President. I just wanted to take the opportunity to inform our members that we just have cited board members of this document, and with regards to specifically the letter itself of notification of material facts in relation to the annual report, I have asked that our acting CEO attend to this. To the allegations in the report, and it will be part of the board agenda when we meet this, which will be on the 6th of November. With regards to the use of resources by senior management, this is specifically the document to which we have sent, and we will ask that you also respond with whatever, as much as we can to the allegations raised in both reports to the Ethics Committee, and that we will investigate all the allegations that have been made in the committee's letters to the committee and myself. Stephenson, as you mentioned, it is out of the ordinary that the staff member refer matters to Parliament and even to the board in this matter, and we protect and hold sacred good governance practices as a board in the matter, and therefore we generally have an arm's length relationship with management through which we have oversight, and so these matters will be taken on a serious basis as we do this. But
that also
that
you that you have some transparency on the allegations. That's true. Is this the first time that you've seen these things? Alright, so, okay, then we might want, maybe, if we're not in a position to respond to that, maybe you should indicate that. You can go back and then report in writing. But if you are able to pick up on anything now, that will be fine. I'd still
like us to touch briefly on the highlight, because I think this matter is very important. Firstly, we're dealing here, Honorable Chair, with a member of staff, a disgruntled member of staff who is will be subjected to a disciplinary hearing on Thursday, tomorrow. Simply because there are other allegations against surface against the gentleman. And as you can see, and if you read this, there's a sense of a nervous reaction to some of these things. Mr. Mulika is the head of the broadcast and television unit, who started with Mulika late last year. He is from the industry as a producer and himself as a director.
He also, in the context, has a history of going through the CCMA and something.
Just point of thought. Is this part of the report of the collective, or is that giving us the overview? Because this report has met and discussed with me, because we expect a report from the staff and the board and the collective, rather than getting this overview. Maybe we can give them time first after the subject, they must finish their report to us rather than getting the piecemeal information. I don't think we assist us as a committee.
Let me make a point that we give them an opportunity to study the allegation and to table a full report to us within 7 days. Is that reasonable? Within 7 days, and they'll send a report to us. And then that we expect a report that after 7 days. Any further questions? Let's
see it. Just quickly with regard to the vacancy rate, I know we have an acting CEO, and other people's vacancies, is there any particular reason for that? Is there any plan to fill those positions as permanent positions?
With regard to the vacancy for the CEO, we have been going through various iterations of attempting to place somebody in that position. As recently as last week, Tuesday, we were requested by the Department of Communications to put the process of we had put in place a hiring process which we were eager to conclude this before the end of this month. We've been asked for that by the new director general to involve the department more actively in the process of filling that vacancy. And so I'm awaiting, I've given her a date for the shortlisting and interview process to take place. I'm awaiting feedback from the department in that regard.
I just understand this. Are you saying that the department wants to participate in the interview process? Are they allowed to do that because there's a board? Presumably there's a senior representative in the board.
Yes, Chairperson, you are right. The person who represented the shareholders in this process was Tatani Baloy, and she has been removed from the board. I was given this information by the director general verbally. I'm awaiting a written notification of her removal. Her replacement hasn't been selected since the request from the DG that we provide space, 3 possible dates for the interview process. That person will participate in the process of selecting the CEO and the board member. And the process is usually that the board is made a recommendation to the minister, and the minister ratifies the recommendation that is made with us having given the minister all the information with regard to the applicants and the process that is undertaken to make that recommendation.
Thank you. I'm doing questions on the issue. they come down and qualify as a public financial organization. And then again, if the company is also exempt from investigating. The question is, how do we do the organization or the organization's financial standing? What is a provision for the organization to be able to raise its own source of funding other than from national fiscal? And the exemption from VAT, are they safe or should it be company?
I'll deal with that question first. As a Schedule 3A public entity in NISA, it's the best to get our regulations set up. So, by regulation, we are in access that not allowed to claim back in the court in the court of the satisfaction of the court. In terms of public benefit organizations, that's the one we're talking about. This is the one of the fact that the NISA is an actual fact of the Section 21 companies and association of the day. And that is where our city of this is I think in recent years, what we have tried to do is actually supplement the income that we get from the generation of additional revenue by providing trade to the land. That's really what it has been. If in actual fact doesn't really subsidize the cost that we incur, because a lot of the revenue that we generate is in an out situation, we have possibly find things with management and comments.
Thank you, the chairperson. I was very impressed when we visited Namita for the good job they are doing. And as I see, the main aim is to teach students in the studio and to be practical and do the job, and that's what it's all about. Can you give me an answer? You know, I've got the impression, like many of the other state entities, you know, there's the executive and there's the board and everything. So all the funds are being spent actually not on the core issues but on other issues. For instance, why is it necessary, I'm not criticizing the media at all, but why is it necessary to have a board and everything, to just have skilled people on the ground that know what they are doing? How to train people and how to skill them behind the microphone. That's all it's about. Not just huge structures and everything. Oh, well, I think it's a bit, it's unnecessary.
I would like to refer members to the historical context in which I'm about.
MEDUSA was established as part of our memorandum and articles of association. We are founding members as well as a board of executives, a board which is limited to 10 people, including executives. That board, from a governance perspective, reports to the minister through the chairperson of the board. For your information, we have on the 4th of September, the 8th of September, amended the memorandum and article to include a deputy chairperson of the board, at both the shareholder and our request. So it's a governance issue, and as a PSMA also requires that the institution has a board. With regard to the relationship between the board, management and staff, as I said earlier, in relation to the report that was received from one of the staff members, we have always as a board emphasize governance as sacrosanct in the organization, and to that extent we give strategic guidance to the organization, and we hold them accountable for meeting the objectives and goals of the organization. Since there has not been a CEO in, or since we've been having an acting CEO with us having one member missing from our executive team, as chairperson and chairperson of committees, we have made a constant effort to be involved in the research as far as we could without being operational, so that we are sure that we are able to reach our organizational goals and that nothing falls between the cracks while we are waiting for a CEO to be appointed.
Thank you, Jefferson. I think we are guilty because we are jumping around a little bit, but I hope the board and the executive will excuse us for that. I just wanted to raise two issues. The one was the issue of the lease agreement, etc. I believe that there was a lease agreement signed for a period of 3 years, which will probably expire by next year sometime. And I think it's the Falkland facility, which is quite expensive. I see them nodding their heads. And I was just wondering, you know, if there's any way that there could be more affordable for the facilities there. But the second issue that I wanted to raise was just I wanted to request information about why was there a surplus last year and then a deficit this year. And the reason is just that if there is a problem of the operations are expanding, but the state contribution is not sort of expanding in the same sort of proportion, then it must indicate to us that there are some red lights flashing, and we need to look at that. What and how do they see could that be corrected? Do they have the ability to start conducting additional work for additional income for the meter? Is it allowed? What would they require? Would it require sort of then new facilities such as a little van with equipment and fast training? I don't know, could we just hear how they see? We'll see that. And then just lastly, would they say that they get adequate support and direction from the DOC, and I see them smiling. What is there that we as a portfolio committee could facilitate or assist them with to make sure that they are keeping up a very important field transfer mechanism. I agree with what the Honourable Manabash said. It was really a very interesting visit, and we wouldn't like to lose that. What is there that we could do from the from a committee side?
Okay, I think it's time to possibly respond to the first question from the committee. We are currently in our midway to our three-year lease period. Our lease is scheduled to expire at the end of 2010. This is the second time that we actually fact rolled the lease over. And we were very successful in getting a reduced rental the second time down. We could see this out in the market to get other options because as we are situated in Parktown at the moment, it actually suits us very well given the fact that we've got access to the dark store availability that's developing in the downtown area, and that's where we actually have a number of our students occupying premises at the moment. So it's actually very convenient and central for us to be where we are. But we are definitely short of space, and any sort of expansion and actually taking more students on board to do what we do is granted by the fact that we don't have sufficient physical premises to do that on. The idea of actually setting up premises at NASDAQ once the 2020 World Cup has finished has also been kicked around, and that's another idea of the two part of that is going to be. So the premises is actually occupation of premises and getting premises from the media is actually very high on our radar, and it's something that needs to be addressed to expand those by basically. With regards to the question on the surplus and deficits, I can just explain what is actually happening here. At the end of the 2008 financial year, we had not utilized all the funding that had been made available to us purely because of the timing factor. This particularly related to the starting up of our promotions and friendships. And it kicked over into the new financial year, and we got permission from Treasury to hang on to those funds. If you have a look at the we are under question, we are in a deficit, but if you look at the two together, it seems to be virtually on par. That's why we have a surplus deficit situation operating. I think in terms of the funding, needless to say, Namisa does have a problem with some funding. You know, the mandate of Namisa has changed in the last 3 to 4 years. We have to go back and look at what Namisa historically did in the start of the company. It focused on training a very limited number of students that were basically historically disadvantaged to train their disabled. And the focus of training them was different. In the last 3 to 4 years, the initial focus on training has been to train students to go out into the market and go looking for work, or finish the status and to deliver work, which is a completely different focus. And we've also increased the number of students. That has resulted in an increase in the space required for students to go out into the market. It pushes up the cost of canteen, pushes up the training cost, and obviously what has also happened is that with the advent of the PMA and the government and the ministry and the board coming in, these costs have also skyrocketed. Before you would have a situation where you would have board meetings that was maybe a board and the board committee meeting happening twice a year. We have meetings 4 times a year. We are fully functional committee. We also have an executive team comprising of CEO, COO, CSO. And we have other governments and administrative staff. It actually helps them to make us compliant. That's why we can actually come in with a nice in order to get there. Which is something that has been challenging. All these things cost money. The bottom line is that the money allocation to the meetup has not been. All that they've had year on year
if the inflation increase that has been granted to the organization. And so that just puts us in a situation that we are forbidden that for money and for functioning as far as an organization is concerned. And I think we really do need to find ways and means that we can address this issue. Going forward and looking at the expansion that we require and doing what we see that needs for us, we definitely need additional funding in this regard.
Does this make it anything later than you?
Yes, just to expand, we have an actual fact put into place, I think it's 2 years ago. We put in another request for additional funding and it was turned down. We put in another request for additional funding and that was turned down as well. And I think, in my opinion, because alternative forms of funding to actually try and get the idea of the Mesa fully functional, because it is a wonderful concept. And I don't know if we will be able to get an increase in terms of our MCS allocation from Treasury for, you know, to actually touch the idea of what it is that Mesa does forward and really capitalize on the potential that it can create.
I'm concerned because I picked up something sort of in relation to that. And you know, it's one of those institutions that you build up and then it starts flying. And then it's really bad if you have to cut back the wing to say, where you have the institutional knowledge, you have a reservoir of real hands-on experience, you have the evidence that this institution can deliver, and now because of external factors, the funding is not forthcoming. So, hence the question that I had, are they allowed to sort of enter into outside contracts, additional contracts, so that they can start with some sort of commercial activity to help them with the funding? Alternatively, is it possible that from the Department of Education, higher education, a specific allocation can be made? It is very sad to see that vast sums of government money go into ineffective operations, and it would be so good if some of that could be rather rechanneled and reallocated to successful operations that are just running short on practical funding. What is fantastic is to see that those students are going out with skills that will immediately place them into the market. And they shouldn't be in any way disadvantaged once they've gone through these courses. So I just wanted to know, is there another way to arrange this? Have they considered that? Have they entered into discussions with the Department of Education or with Treasury? I fear that once the Department looks at the different entities, then this is just another one and the money will not be forthcoming. Thank you.
Thank you,
Chair.
Third question. Firstly, I'd like to check whether all staff members understand they have performance agreements, because I can see from whether you're giving them some incentive bonus. I thought that you should not be on the performance agreement and their performance agreement. That's the first question. The second question, are you aware of the original office? If so, where? Because I'm asking the same relation to whether I am supposed to take a certain minister and things like that. Thirdly, you correct me if I'm wrong. I think the one
the reason why we are having a minister was to train or capacitate those people who were excluded in order to transform the leader. Are we making a progress? Not in the sense that we've trained so much people, but if we follow them, even if SABC is taking them or any other institution, we follow them to see whether they are making progress and things like that, because the minister is not like other institutions. It's an institution with a clear mandate and instruction. Thank you.
Thank you, Professor. As far as the Mercury's question with regards to engaging third parties or outside organizations for augmenting our income and funding, we do engage with sometimes in answer to specific proposals with third parties. We do send them for work, and we have been able to supplement our income in that manner in previous years. We in a bilateral with the new minister engaged him on the matter of the lack of funding and lack of financial support that the minister was receiving, and the minister did commit to assisting us in engaging with whichever other government departments, specifically the Department of Education, to get some certain funding from them. And we've also independently started having discussions with the Department of Higher Education in that regard. I'll ask if you can look at the examples of other proposals that we have put forward. I'll ask the SNCL to respond to that or to provide additional information. As far as performance agreements are concerned, the incentive bonuses, as they are reflected in the annual report, were given to staff in the absence of current performance agreements. We, as a board, have instituted a policy by which we have requested that management put in place performance agreements. We've engaged a company to assist us with regrading the jobs of the staff of the minister, and that exercise will be completed. We've also taken a decision as the board to use the government system of equates in terms of the job grading and the remuneration for the job at the minister's concern, and that has also been, that exercise has been completed and has been put in place. The only outstanding performance agreement which we are going to attend to at our board meeting is that of the ExCo, the three ExCo members. We obviously have to work from a bottom-up perspective, and the organization has been, over the last couple of months, following the job grading and profiling. They've been going, management has been going through the exercise of doing performance agreements and spending the job and management on how to evaluate performance according to the policies that have now been put in place. So the answer is that at the end of December, as is customary within the meter, we will only as a board consider any bonuses or incentives on the basis of performance agreements and gender.
So you still haven't completed. Okay. With regard to in terms of the strategies, particularly for supplementary funding, there are two ways that we look at. Even though there's more that we can, we pursue content development. And the issue of content development, as Catherine has explained, we either write up a proposal
to potential companies that would take up those and fund them, and be able to then make some revenue out of that. But also we, when there are tenders out there, we are, for example, the broadcaster tends to put out request for proposals in terms of content development. We also compete with the independent production sector on the same footing for those projects. And that also likely accounts for the difference that the fact in the reporting that we could not reach our target simply because of what is happening out there. Secondly, we also, for training purposes, broadcasters and companies can also act as our strategic partner when they have specific training needs and would like for us to put a production, a program, training program that speaks to the specific needs. And in that way, that's an alternative for raising funding. But the strength of putting together this proposal and going for pitching, searching, and all of that also does impact on us operationally because we don't have the big capacity to be able to handle that. But it is something that if when we consider the overall strategy of Minister of Force, it is something that could provide some relief on the part of the treasury, you know, so that we're not going there with a cap in hand. A commercial arm of some sort, but it would have to provide an appropriate book. The second part is the question that relates to whether we have regional markets. Lenita has physical presence in the Western Cape, which is in Franschhoek, as well as in Khartoum, the Pakistan that you listed. But the extension of opportunities to other provinces do happen through the strategic processes, strategic programs that we go out to use resources through our own means. Through the, for example, strategic alliance, we rent something that the DOD supported on area, the National Digital Repository Project, which was aimed at training young people from across the nine provinces. So what we then do is we physically send out our people to those provinces for limited periods to go and conduct training. We do that also particularly with the radio sector where we do for community radio sector, where we send out our people to go and run modules of our courses and leave back for Joburg. And while these trainees are at the stations, they can then compile what we said to portfolios of evidence that are then sent to us for evaluation. So as a model, it is a model that I think works for a small organization such as ourselves that is also hard pressed in terms of our funding. It does, in a sense, address the part of the extension of our mandate. Are we making progress in terms of transforming the industry and pulling up things? Yes, we are. Fortunately, when the honorable members of the State Minister also showed videos of some of our students, I think the impact could be double if not treble, only if we were able to address some of the challenges that are facing for us to afford more opportunities to more young people. But by and large, most of our students that get out there, we receive reports and reviews from some of the employers about the quality of the work that they are doing. And I think members also saw the quality itself. It's without a doubt compatible with some of the data. Thank you.
Thank you.
From the rest of the figures that have been listed, that will be added by the classification of system categories to end at the time. Which categories are you referring to? If maybe you can elaborate further, what should be included before you say it's necessary
How do you deal with
I think we definitely see the balance for that paragraph. It says, for the current period, no restatements have been made. I think this is basically just a standard disclaimer in the annual financial statement to indicate when there are changes. There are instances that happen specifically where you get rounding, that flows from one year to another year, which is not material. But there are other instances where you have to reclassify information in terms of the way it's presented, or in terms of where there has been a restatement of primary figures, where that has become necessary. But in the financial statements as presented today, there have not been any. Thank you, Chair.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you for the invitation. I think I would share the view that we were quite impressed with the work that you were doing when you were there. Hands-on, very practical, very creative. So keep up the wonderful work. If we can respect the minister to increase the funding, we will do that. No, you must talk nicely. When you want something, you must talk nicely. Mustn't go out and antagonize people, and they tend to go to your head. Now, I don't know, Louis, if you could have something to eat. There's still a lot of food here. We were expecting many more people to come and listen to the DLC. Those who haven't had lunch, please have a snack. And is the house cooking? Because I haven't heard the bell.
They did ring.
Okay, so we need to go to the house. We're supposed to be reconvening here at 4 o'clock. But until then, there's a special caucus of the ANC to listen to Sheikh Obama's daughter. And that meeting is probably going to be taking place here. If it's a clash, then Sammy will send out an SMS. We might have to move to another committee room or something of that sort. You start up people, you might not know where we're going to be meeting, but then you just meet us outside here at 4 and then somebody will tell us. You shift into another name. Right? So we reconvene at 4 o'clock. Thank you very much.
If you have people that can tell you, you ask them. You go to claim your 9 million. They can, they won't claim it from me up to life. And when you ask them, because they tell you, sure, they have been using the money.
Okay. All right.
before.
Mm-hmm.
Or so,
I
but
confirmed you.
We'll read it here.
Nothing here. The change of things, then I'll meet you guys here. Then
I
think we'll meet. Yeah, we'll say it's changed.
No, I don't need to go to the office.
You know, he grabbed it on.